B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. And Chris, as we're getting into the final hour of the show here, obviously wants me to dance for him. He's like, oh, I could use a little Deckerhoff. Gene Deckerhoff! Yes, a week ago, right now, this hour, I wasn't even here. It was Gasper and Deckerhoff, the first ever episode. And he wanted to, you haven't heard the final call.
No, I never heard the final call from
B-Rob, I think it's in Monday's cards. If you scroll down a bit, it says TBB versus GBP. That would be Tampa Bay Bucks versus Green Bay Packers. Final call. I believe that's it. It's about 14 seconds long. It's actually worth it because, like, he's as cheesy as ever. Ever since I did that 1 hour of, what am I talking about? Ever since I heard Gasper and Deckerhoff last week, I mean, that's all I want to do. Is just I've been living with this for weeks now as the Bucks continue to roll on, sail on, if you will, to the Super Bowl. Is doing Gene Deckerhoff's voice. Bucks win. Bucks win. But, yeah, it was kind of fun. He was as cheesy as ever, if you can pull it up. Do you have it? All right, go ahead.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers, two ticks away. Tom Brady, you're the real deal. Victory formation. Three consecutive post-game wins on the road for Tom Brady. The Bucs win! Bucs win! Tampa Bay is heading to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so
I was a little subdued for Gene.
Oh, you didn't like the Tom Brady. You're the real deal. And so all this week, I've been just doing that to, you know, Dr. Dre. Tom Brady, he's the real deal, like Holyfield. Now all you hookers and hoes know how I feel.
I can't imagine Gene Deckerhoff. Yeah.
Tom Brady, you're the real deal.
You're realer than real deal Holyfield. All you hookers and hoes know how I feel. that's all I want to do is Gene Deckerhoff's voice.
Awesome. He actually sounded more excited when they beat the Saints. I don't know if it's because of the rivalry, but I like the whole, like, what do you say? Tom Brady is the man. The Bucks are the team.
Oh, yeah.
Brady's the man. The Bucks are the team. Bucks win. Bucks win. Fire the cannons.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too. I just want to keep firing those cannons. But, hey, first team to ever, a home team in the Super Bowl ever. Another first for our guy, Tom Brady.
That's right.
Our Tom is an awesome Tom. His 10th Super Bowl, a number that is, I mean, it's ridiculous
staggering to
try to even comprehend. I also think, you know, here's an underrated storyline of Tom Brady making the Super Bowl at age 43. A win for guys in their 40s. You know, you can look at him as a beacon of hope. You know, now that I've turned 44 and it feels like it truly is like over in a lot of ways. Like, I can look at Tom Brady and see, like, you know what? No, I'm never going to eat like him or look like him and have the plastic surgery like him and all of that and be as successful as him and make that kind of money and have his kind of life. But you know what? I, as a washed up guy at 44, can look at Tom Brady and see, you know what? That's a beacon of hope for someone like me.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I just like sort of continuing with the argument. I just like arguing with Bedard because I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand the holdouts at this point. And I heard Bedard say this, that this isn't the NBA and you can't ascribe changing a culture or you can't ascribe too much influence to one player. And I feel like that's kind of missing the point of the you know, the quintessence of Tom Brady, the essence of Tom Brady. It's the idea that Brady has the ability to affect a team sport, the ultimate team sport, like football, in a way that an NBA player would. That's why Brady's so great, because he is that rare player that can affect an entire team like an NBA guy, because he is that guy that with his intelligence and his heart and his will and his leadership, all those intangibles that you can't measure, like passer rating or time to throw from the pocket, that he's able to use those intangibles to have a tangible effect on winning for a franchise. So I just disagree. I mean, I know it's cliche, but everything I just said can be condensed down to Brady's a winner and you can't say anything otherwise.
Yeah, it's the it thing, right?
Yes.
And a lot of people that are definitely more into the tangibles, you know, and watching sports and covering sports, like, I get it, but there's people that just don't, they can't wrap their head around that it thing, the intangibles, something you can't truly, you know, quantify. And I believe in the intangibles. I think that is Tom Brady's greatest asset. And I do think that there has been this trickle-down effect from his leadership and poise that has affected that team and the fact that they're in the Super Bowl. It's one of the losingest franchises, not just in the NFL, but in all of sports. And then he went there and turned that around in 6 months is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And the last playoff game they had won before he got there was the Super Bowl they won. And now they're back in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's just amazing to me. And I just want to raise one other point here. And this is in my article on WCVB.com. Now there's been this push, I feel like, Jim, to discredit what Brady has done to a degree by saying, well, he went to a stacked team. Like he was Kevin Durant joining a fully healthy version of the Warriors. That is such revisionist history. I don't remember anybody saying the Bucs were a Super Bowl favorite when Brady went there. I don't remember him being grouped in with teams like Chicago or Minnesota or Indy or even Tennessee, where people felt like, well, this team is one high caliber quarterback away from being a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I don't agree with that, and I don't remember that. And here's the other thing I would say. If you look really closely, like look really closely, I actually think the Bucs may have had better weapons last year. People have forgotten how good Breshad Perriman was for them as a number three receiver. He was outstanding. And Antonio Brown only came to this team after 8 games. And Rob Gronkowski, everybody around here was telling me he was washed the first 6 weeks of the season. So now all of a sudden Brady's on this super team because Gronkowski's there and AB is there. Two guys who wouldn't even be there if he weren't there. I don't understand that line of thinking, and I think it's wrong.
5-11, 7-9, Super Bowl. Like, what's the fact? What's the one thing that was added to the team?
The quarterback.
Yeah, thank you. So, look, and if you want to discount it, again, I get it. You're dug in. Chris and I are dug in, but I just think you're being purposely ignorant if you don't
want or obtuse.
To, yeah, or you don't want to recognize the intangibles or the things that matter. Brady is the reason for their season.
He's the real
period.
Deal.
Yeah, he's the real deal.
And I'll just say this real quickly, too. The other thing I want to say along the lines of better weapons last year, they had a fully healthy O.J. Howard. O.J. Howard only played 4 games this year. So I think the Bucs actually had better weapons last year than this year. So this idea that he suddenly went to, like, the Golden State Warriors of the gridiron and, like, well, of course he was going to light it up is ridiculous, and it's false.
Hookers and hoes know how I feel. If it's good enough to get broke off a proper chunk, I'll take a small piece of some of that funky stuff. Bucks win. Bucks win.
Your thoughts on Brady, the Tampa Bay Bucks. Chris, you give them a sniff, though, against the Kansas City Chiefs, who really do look like they've turned it on, even with Mahomes dealing with the concussion, the turf toe injury. Like, I mean, that offense, I look, this is the team that the Bucks hosted. Mid-season.
It was November 29th.
Late in the season.
Their last loss.
Tyreek Hill, they couldn't stop. He had like 250 yards against them, and 200 of them came in like the first quarter.
Correct.
Their secondary's been dinged up. Yeah. I know the defense has definitely played better here this last month, or at least during this postseason run. I don't know how they're going to stop that team.
Look, I think Todd Bowles needs to throw the game plan from the first game into the trash. Mahomes lit them up. He threw for 462 yards and 3 touchdowns. And you mentioned what Tyreek Hill did, 269 yards and 3 touchdowns. He caught 13 of the 15 balls they threw to him. I think one factor in this game that people aren't talking about that could be a big factor is Eric Fisher, the left tackle for the Chiefs, being out with the torn Achilles. Because if the Bucs can get pressure with 4 and drop 7 into coverage and maybe double-team Tyreek Hill, they might have a shot in this game. I give them a puncher's chance, but I think it's going to be tough. They're going to have to keep up what they've done offensively, which is score more than 30 points in all these games. I think this could be kind of like Super Bowl 52, where it's one of those 41-33 games, and it's something like that where it's close at the end, and maybe there's a turnover by Brady or a turnover by Mahomes that ends up making the difference.
And just because, like, I thought that AFC Championship game was mostly uneventful, especially, you know, after watching the how great that NFC Championship game was, just in terms of how just in terms of like the theater of it,
the
all
drama,
the
sure.
Yeah, it was awesome
intrigue.
And I don't know, I know the Bills were up early, but you knew that the Chiefs were going to explode and that thing was over. Travis Kelce, I think it's actually underrated for the Chiefs because it's all about Mahomes and Hill, and I get it, and especially with the heat speed of Hill, like he's bad person, phenomenal athlete, but Kelce. I, like most people, Chris, around here, used to despise the guy, like, because I thought he was soft, like, way too outspoken for what you got in terms of productivity on the field. Yeah, he'd put up some numbers, but I don't know. One of those kind of players I think he could hit in the mouth and, like, he would wilt, especially against the Patriots. Now, that dude's consistently dangerous. I thought he was the most important player for the Chiefs in their offense in that win last week against Buffalo. It was 13 catches, 118 yards, a couple of touchdowns. Wow. And those kind of numbers, if you've been paying attention, at least for this season, that's kind of like the norm for Travis Kelce now. And so brace yourselves, Patriots fans, for people saying he was historically better than Gronk.
You think so?
Oh, Chris, what he's doing now consistently, if he keeps it up, that's going to happen. From a national standpoint, and ESPN lies, who cares? Just brace yourselves. If Kelce keeps up this pace, and he has mattered as much as he has in the Chiefs offense, and he does, that talk's going to start. Like, because he doesn't get dinged up like Gronk. He's not missing time. He hasn't had, like, back surgery.
That's
or
a good point.
Like that. Like, that conversation will start, I think, from a national standpoint.
I think it will sort of be a conversation that says, okay, who is the best all-around tight end? And who is the most productive pass-catching
tight
end?
Well, he's definitely not going to block.
Because he doesn't block worth a lick.
Right. But, man, in terms of an offensive weapon, nasty.
Absolutely, and that's why it's so hard to even if you double Tyreek Hill, there's other places to go with the ball. Looks like they're going to get Sammy Watkins back. And, yeah, on most teams, Travis Kelce would be basically a number one wide receiver.
All right, your calls. We'll get to them coming up next here. We'll touch on everything. I know a lot of Celtics calls are still hanging on, too, so we'll get to you at 617-779-0985. As soon as someone drops off, you can get on here on Gasper and Murray. Bucks win.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
I put out a poll question today, Mr. Brady, saying that the Patriots moving on from Tom Brady was A, necessary and smart, B, complicated, but probably the right move, C, avoidable, and D, monumentally stupid. You want to vote?
No. No, let's keep our history in perspective. We had 9 friggin' trips to the Super Bowl with the Patriots, you know. We got Patriot blood in our veins, you know. Bill and Mr. Kraft and us and all the teammates, we got something special that we share the rest of our lives. And so we don't have to look back at it as a winner and loser. I think we're all winners, frankly.
Well, I mean, in the battle of your son versus Bill, your son won for 2021.
I would say these days that Tom Brady Sr. is being very diplomatic and is being on his best behavior.
And again, that's Tom Brady Sr. with Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston. You could catch that on Quick Slant. It's part of what I think is the passive-aggressive media tour of Tom Brady Sr. Because you say he's been on his best behavior. What about that that quip he made to Karen Grecian of the Boston Herald saying, what did he chuckle and say, well, Bill's on the hot seat?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, my understanding of it is that maybe he hasn't exactly loved how some of the stories have been portrayed, and really the Brady camp is sort of going out of their way to not take shots at Bill. And it feels like anything that's even because people who are interviewing him are looking for shots at Bill, than anything that could be remotely even perceived as one. And I'm not blaming Karen. I mean, she didn't lead the story with that. It was just in the story.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she wrote the story the right way. But I think they just sort of feel like at this point that, you know, the more he talks, anything that could be even remotely perceived as some sort of shot at Bill, people are looking for it. So they're taking things that aren't shots at him and they're making them shots. I don't know how much more of the media tour from Tom Brady Sr. we're going to see here.
But why, though? Why are we hearing these kind of things initially now, even though I think you're all going to see it ramp down a bit leading into the Super Bowl? Is it a narrative such as Bill made the quarterback or Bill was the more important part here of the last 20 years? Do you think that's what they're trying to strike back against?
A little bit. I mean, I think it's just sort of the idea that you know, Tom was at the end. It was uncharted territory, that it was a move that had to be made. If I had to boil it down, this is my opinion. No one's told me this. But my opinion is the one thing that maybe bothers that camp and bothers Brady is the idea that he was done, you know, that was it. That Bill was making the move. And if he kept him, it was going to be this diminished quarterback, and that, you know, he had somehow fallen off significantly enough that Bill was justified in what he did. And that's not really the case. It was more of Bill's preference and Bill's choice. And Tom Curran has nailed this more than anybody else. He's plugged in more than anybody when it comes to Tom Brady. He's right. And I had mentioned this before in terms of the idea of there was a point where Tom, as frustrated as he was with the season and Bill and the team, when he reached free agency or right before he reached free agency, there was a point where he had warmed up to the idea of coming back. He could have been convinced. And he has that phone call with Bill, and it's just more of the same. And it's kind of, it almost came off like, you know, Bill was doing him a favor.
Well, to use Curran's words, because that was in his podcast earlier this week, he said something along the lines of Bill talked to him like Tom was still under contract.
Yeah. Yeah, like he didn't need to be courted or convinced that this was the best place for him to play moving forward. And, you know, I just think that was a miscalculation or a mistake on Belichick's part. And I think when we look at this thing globally, there are still some mistakes and miscalculation of that relationship. And I heard one of these today across the street where there is a refusal to sort of, you know, take a stand on who's more important. By the way, just to get this out of the way, neither one of these guys is going to 9 Super Bowls or winning 6 without the other. I'm not saying Tom could do it without Bill. Bill could do it without Tom. But I am saying, you know, when you have like the Olympics, right, there's a gold medal, a silver, and a bronze. Somebody has to be on the highest platform. They don't, you know, unless there's 2 gold medal winners and they tie, which is very rare. Normally you look at the platform and it's like, okay, somebody's on the highest platform on the medal stand and somebody's on the second highest. There's nothing wrong with taking silver. Bill, you're the silver medalist. And
no
Brady one
wants
is the
that.
Gold medalist.
No one wants
And people don't want to admit that. And it's like a 60-40 split. But one of the things that's been espoused is, well, you know, Bill developed Tom Brady. First of all, if that's true, why hasn't he developed any other Tom Brady's?
Uh-huh.
And I'll also say this, him saying, or the idea that Bill developed Tom Brady is like me saying, I developed this winning Powerball ticket I found on the ground. I developed this because in Tom's first full season as a starter, which was 2002, he led the league in touchdown passes with 28. Now, they didn't make the playoffs. They were 9-7, but he led the league in touchdown passes with 28.
That's a different time, but still. You know,
I mean,
the league,
you know, different, I mean, it's a different time in the league that you could lead the league with 28 touchdown passes, but he led the league in touchdown passes. I'm not saying Bill didn't help Tom. He did. I'm not saying he didn't teach him football. He did. But the idea that he like brought him along and watered his seed. No, like they stumbled upon a franchise quarterback. That's it.
Yeah.
He was a franchise quarterback almost from the moment he stepped on the field. Now, not at the level he's at now. He certainly improved over the years, but the first season, he's a starter. He leads the league in touchdown passes. And then the next year, 2003, they win the Super Bowl. And it's like, oh, you know, Bill was managing him. You know, he threw the ball 527 times that year. He was 5th in the league in pass attempts. I mean, they used this guy from the jump pretty much as a franchise-type quarterback.
Yeah, and I think too much now has gone the other way in talking about those first championships and that it was like it was all about the defense. And the defense was excellent, especially
in
03-04. But look at Brady's numbers, and if you would go back and even just watch specifically the Super Bowl against the Carolina Panthers, big boy throws. The AFC Championship game in 04 against Pittsburgh, big boy throws. Like, too much is made, and it's gone the other way now.
I agree.
Those first three were more about Bill than it was Tom. Well, that's revisionist history.
I mean, the team, I will say this, the team was definitely more balanced back then.
Definitely,
balanced,
yes, balanced,
offense,
yes.
Defense, and I think that Brady played a particular way.
But we're not talking about, like, the 2000 Ravens.
No, definitely not. You know, Brady played a particular way because the defense was so good, and that's the way Bill wanted to play, and it worked, and it gave them the best opportunity to win. But you're right about this. There's, like, revisionist history now where, you know, he was basically this sidecar or just this caretaker quarterback, and that's not true. I'll even go, 2005, we all remember what happened then in Denver, and that was sort of, you know, a momentary pause in the dynasty that year with Teddy Bruschi coming back from the stroke, and you were in a situation where you didn't have Ty Law and all that. Do you know Brady led the NFL in passing yards that year with 4,110? Like, this idea that he was just like along for the ride in the beginning is not correct.
Or Manning in 2015 with Denver, you know, like it's a false narrative. Scott in the car, though, on a potential quarterback for 2021 for the Patriots. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, fellas. So it seems more and more likely that Stafford is going to get traded to, in all likelihood, the 49ers, which subsequently the 49ers would then release Jimmy G. The last thing I want, and I pray to God every day that this doesn't happen, that Jimmy G comes back. Because wait for it. The narrative is going to be, oh, Belichick, this is all part of his master plan. His master plan was to bring Jimmy back. Like all the idiots that called in immediately after Belichick traded him to the 49ers asking whether or not Jimmy, this is all part of his plan to bring Jimmy G back. So I just don't want him back just for that sole reason.
Oh, well, brace yourself for it because you'd be hearing it if it does end up happening.
I mean, if you change your mind at all on Garoppolo, I still think he's the best option for the Patriots because I think that he's a good fit for this offense with Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick. And yes, Bill Belichick does make a difference. I'm not saying he doesn't make a difference. He does. So I think he would help Jimmy. And the other part of it is I think he's young enough that he could be your quarterback for the next 6-7 years. He's not just a bridge guy. So now you don't have to find two guys. You just have to find one.
Yeah, I'm not as anti him as I used to be, even though, again, I were right about him.
Oh, we were, yeah.
Failure in the Super Bowl, how the coaching staff was terrified of him after that terrible interception against the Vikings to start their playoff run last year. We were right. Everyone else wrong. Mike, Tony. But be that as it may, after the wretched play of Cam Newton last year, I could live with Jimmy Garoppolo. And if anyone's going to maybe beat the bad habits out of Jimmy Garoppolo, it's Bill Belichick. And if I'm Bill Belichick, I brought this up with Mike and Tony during the week, Chris, if I want to win, if I want to win, and that's not just on the field, but off the field, if I'm Bill Belichick, the only path for that is to bring back Jimmy Garoppolo and prove to the Krafts, prove to Tom Brady, prove to the football world, prove to people like you and I that say, Tom won, see, Tom won, the war's over. You got to win with Garoppolo and prove to everyone, see, I was right all along. They forced me to trade him. This was the guy. Garoppolo, I think, is the reason, that is the guy if Bill wants to, like, you know, get back in this and prove to the world, like, no, the war is not over between Tom and I. I can still win this. The only way to do that is to bring back Garoppolo and win with him.
So I don't think it's the only way, and here's what I would say. I would say part of what works against that is a couple of things. One, Garoppolo was a second-round pick, so he's a high pick. Also, he went to another team and another coach, and they were able to guide him to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So if he comes back here and you do it, it's like, well, okay, you can win with a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. So can a lot of other people. I think the way to do it is to take a loser like Matthew Stafford, who has only 2 double-digit win seasons in his career, hasn't had a winning season since 2017, I think, has only had 4 winning seasons in 12 years and has thrown double-digit interceptions every year he's played at least half the games. If he takes a guy like that, then I think he wins.
Okay, yeah. Well, they did guide Garoppolo there with the Niners, but with an air of terror, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Okay. Well, the Stafford thing I could be talked into.
He could win with, I'll give you another guy. How would you feel about this? Because I think this is a real debate. This guy has been to a Super Bowl, but I think we both agree that he sucks and sucks worse than Jimmy G. What if Jared Goff were the guy here and Belichick took Goff to a Super Bowl?
No, that helps that narrative too, because I think he stinks. I will say this, between him and Garoppolo, I think he's the lesser of two evils because at least he's durable. You know, I know.
Really?
You'd rather
have Goff than Garoppolo?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. How many games has Garoppolo missed?
23.
Oh, that's insane. He's only been in the league for a handful of years. Goff at least has a level of durability. He had that pin in his thumb or whatever, the throwing hand this year towards the end. But there is some toughness with that kid, maybe because he's so stupid he doesn't realize he's in pain.
Bizarro Ryan Gosling.
Didn't know where the sun set in Rose. Remember that?
Like, oh, when, yeah. That was, like, was that Hard Knocks?
It was Hard Knocks. And that's was right. The first. That was my first, you know, thing over that hit me over the head. Like, oh, God, this kid's a moron. Like, I know you don't have to be the brightest ball to be successful to be a quarterback in the NFL. Just look at Eli Manning. But, I mean, come on. Like, and it's been proven right, I think, for the most part. And now Sean McVay and the Rams seem like they want to get rid of that kid as quickly as possible.
I know, they really do. It's unbelievable to me how quickly the narrative there has changed because they signed him to that huge contract. And now I read one of these things in The Athletic. The other day, I think it was yesterday, about this, you know, saying they're pursuing some of these quarterbacks. And they say even if they can't trade for Stafford or Watson, McVay's plan is to have a quarterback competition between Goff and that John Wofford guy.
Oh, oh, jeez!
Imagine that.
All right. Well, we'll wrap with your calls and segue into five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. Coming up next here on Gasper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
He's a great man. He's a great leader. He's a great person. He's, you know, a great friend. He's very loyal. He's just got a great way about communicating effectively with everybody around here. And everybody has a great affection for him, for the person he is. There's nobody that ever would say anything bad about BA. He's just he's so endearing to everybody. And I think everyone wants to win for him, and I think that's what coach, you know, what's what you want to do for a coach is you want to get out there and you want to win for him. And he puts a lot into it, expects a lot out of it, you know, has high expectations for us every day of practice. Just really excited for him to be recognized in the way that he is. I know he's two-time coach of the year, but just done an amazing job this year with the team in really adverse situations, and just love playing for him.
Tom Brady.
Heard that last night on Adam Jones' show. Chris and Arcan wanted to play it here today. So shout out to Jones. I repurposed some of your production. Love that. Tom Brady, though, just couldn't say enough good things about Bruce Arians.
Yeah, that was
loyalty this week, Chris, which I think, again, is another not-so-subtle shot at Bill Belichick for him being disloyal and the fact that he ends up in a Buccaneers uniform. I think that's as obvious as, you know, the sun in the sky. Like, what else could that be? How do you know that Bruce Arians is loyal when you've been around him for 6 months? You know what I mean?
Like, oh, that's a good point. I just feel like he's like BA greater than sign BB.
That's how he's acting right
yeah,
now.
Exactly.
All right. We'll try to run through as many of your calls here as we wrap up another edition of Gasper Murray and segue into five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. We have some Celtics calls still hanging on, like Dave in Shrewsbury. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, I just wanted to call and get your thoughts on Brad Stevens. I mean, from what I see, it seems like, you know, his rotations are questionable. You know, he doesn't really effectively use the coach's challenge. I don't know how important that is, but I mean, maybe once or twice since it's been in effect, I've seen him use it effectively. And, you know, this team is a Jekyll and Hyde team, and at some point you have to look at the coach and say, you know, what's his role in that? I mean, sometimes they seem like they're very unprepared. They're coming out flat. You know, tonight they're playing the Lakers. I wouldn't be surprised if they won by 20, and I wouldn't be surprised if they lost by 20. How much of this is on the coach? I mean, I know he's a good X's and O's guy, but I really don't see anything else that he does well. And I'd like to get your opinion on Stevens and how he's doing and how he's done in the time that he's been here.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Brad, look, certainly there are some questions about how he manages people. The one thing you can look at Brad with and sort of divide his career up is that in the beginning, when he had lesser talented teams, those teams absolutely overachieved. And you have to give him credit for that. I think what's a little baffling is that now that he has more talent, you feel like the teams don't always succeed commensurate with their talent. It's hard to get on a guy for getting to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, which he did. But, yeah, they could have won that series. They definitely could have won that series. And I think that's sort of the mark on Brad at this point is can he get over that hump and make it to an NBA Finals? But in some of those series, like the first Eastern Conference Finals against LeBron, like they, you know, I'm not going to say they had no business being there, but they really shouldn't have been there and they were no match for them. And then they didn't have Isaiah Thomas. The losing the other one, they weren't the better team, but they did have a 3-2 lead and it was bad the way they lost in game 7, shooting 6-for-49 or whatever it was on threes. And then you lose last year. And then what's happened with Horford, Hayward, Kyrie, the biggest question just becomes, can he, in a Phil Jackson manner, get everybody to buy into their role? And I think that still is very much up for debate.
I think it's very telling, too, that especially this season so far, there's a lot of the fan base starting to question Brad Stevens. Another call on Brad Stevens from Ian in the truck. Hello, Ian.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to get your opinion on a couple of things because I think the biggest three issues with the Celtics are obviously Stevens, as everybody's stated today. I don't know if you guys picked up on this. I don't think I've heard anybody talk about it, but when those two turnovers happened at the end of the first half the other night, he was walking to the locker room in the middle of the second turnover. He was standing behind the backboard. Not that I'm a former NBA player, but if I was a player, at least take part in the game. Don't just throw a hissy fit and start walking to the locker room in the middle of the first half still taking place. I just thought that was kind of funny. I know it's the NBA, but – and then, obviously, Marcus Smart, for every reason everybody said, I just think he's a fifth to sixth man on a championship team, not a fourth or third option. And I wanted to get your guys' opinion on this specifically because I don't think anybody really brings this up, but is Kemba Walker really an elite third option on a championship team? I get he's been good in the past, but he just had that knee issue. He has a big-time contract. That kind of locks him up on a lot of moves. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on if you think it's a good option to actually move him to free up some room to maybe get a guy like Beal. I know it's a long shot, but – and the last thing was I'm tired of Danny and all the green teamers thinking that they won the championship last year and they don't need to actually make a splash. This team has been to the finals in the conference semis for the past 4 to 5 years. They actually have to start trying to win it and not just get there.
Yeah, Ian, and thanks for the call. I mean, you could say that about the last like three consecutive years. People talk about this team and how some of the players act. On Kemba, from a statistical standpoint, what he did with Charlotte, yes. I think a third option, yes.
Yeah, I think he is an upper echelon third option, yes.
But
if he's healthy.
Right. So now that's the caveat.
That's the caveat.
If healthy, and I have real concerns about that knee, and Brad Stevens came out this week and already said, too, like, we're not going to be playing him on back-to-backs. How's that make you feel?
Not great, but I think they're trying to preserve him. I think as long as he's healthy, he is that elite third option. You know, going back to Brad a little bit, here's the way I feel. I also feel like Danny Ainge hasn't done him any favors. You go back to a couple years ago, Kyrie's last year, that roster didn't work. It was just a collection of talent, and it put Brad in a really tough spot. It was a bunch of guys who all wanted to hoist double-digit shots per game
Morris.
And role players who didn't want to be role players. Now I think he's given him a roster this year where there's not enough on the bench. So we can question the rotations and the starting lineup with the two bigs and all that other stuff. But with Kemba being out, they just didn't have a lot of really desirable options. So I think it's sort of been two extremes. On the one end, again, before when Kyrie was here, he gave him a collection of talent, not a team, that didn't fit together. And now this year, he's given him a bench that's really bereft of role players who can fill their roles or guys that are usable. So I think you have to look a little more at Danny. I'm not absolving Brad Stevens fully, but I think if you're Danny Ainge, you have to know your coach's strengths and weaknesses, just like a coach has to know his player's strengths and weaknesses and put them in a position to succeed. I'm not sure that Danny has always done that for Brad Stevens.
Sean in New Hampshire, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Sean.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to make a couple quick points on the Brady and Belichick balance. So this is the way I see it. They won six Super Bowls. I give Bill credit for 01, 04, and 2018. I mean, 01, the AFC Championship, Brady didn't even score a touchdown. They had two special teams touchdowns, and Drew Bledsoe had one. 04, Rodney Harrison gets a pick in the end zone, gets another pick deep into their own territory to end the game. Got to lean more towards the defense on that one. 2018, I mean, they scored 13 points. It's hard to give them hardly any credit for that.
Well, he still made there was only one touchdown in that game, though, and he still made the play to set it up, did he not?
Right, yes, yeah, no, he came through in the clutch moments, but I think more or less in the whole duration of the game, the defense was definitely more responsible for that game and the coaching. Now, the other three that they won, offensive shootouts, you got to give them to Tom. The two that they lost to the Giants, offense didn't show up. And the one against the Eagles, of course, we're never going to know what happened with that because Bill is just a bonehead and he benched Malcolm Butler for no reason, you know, probably because he got into a fight with his son. That's kind of the, you know, the biggest speculation that I lean towards.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I feel like it's kind of a – I'm definitely more Team Brady. It's like a 60-40 thing for me.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that because I think people are kind of hot taking it a little too much that, like, you know, Brady's the Allah praise Jesus and it was him the whole time and not Bill. And I just really don't think that's the case.
No, I agree with the 60-40, but here's what I'd say. So the first Super Bowl, Tom obviously led them down the field for the field goal that won it. And the defense was very good to get the pick six from Ty Law, but the defense kind of crumbled in the fourth quarter. But if you want to give Bill credit for the ones where the defense won, then what about the three they lost? Like he said, offense didn't show up. All three Super Bowls Tom Brady lost, the Patriots had the lead with under 3.5 minutes to go.
Yeah, those Giants ones.
And all three of those times, not only did the defense just allow points, they allowed a touchdown. So if you want to tell me, like, okay, you know, Bill gets credit for this one and this one with the defense, then what about the three they lost? Yeah, they didn't light it up, obviously, in Super Bowl 42, but they had the lead, and all they had to do was don't give up a touchdown. You're going to win the game. And they couldn't get the stop. Super Bowl 46, same deal. You know, it goes off Wes Welker's hands. The Patriots have the lead with under 3.5 minutes to go. Get a stop. They not only could they not get a stop, the only way to even give Brady a chance at the end was
let him score.
Intentionally. The greatest defensive coach of all time, the only thing he could do at that point with a defense that at that point had given up the most gross passing yards in the history of the league that year in 2011 was to say, just let him in. That's all they could do. And then you go back to the last Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52, that they lost. Brady throws for 505 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Obviously, he had the strip sack. But again, they have the lead late, and they can't stop Nick Foles. They can't stop Nick Foles from getting into the end zone, and that's what happened there. And so they end up losing that one. And not only could you not stop Nick Foles, and not only do the Eagles end up with 41 points, but you never exhausted all of your options in terms of putting Malcolm Butler on the field. So, yes, if you want to give Bill credit, and I think it's a 60-40 split. Let me be clear on that, 60-40 Brady. But if you're going to start ascribing certain Super Bowls to the defense, then what about the losses that I put on the defense?
I love it. Well, after that tour de force of crapping all over Belichick, let's wrap up with five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports.
I got five questions for Chris Gasper of Channel 5. I got five questions that got nothing.
Chris, question number one, very timely. What's your take on Reddit v. hedge funds this week, a.k.a. the GameStop stock story?
I'm with the people on this. I'm not going to pretend that I understand it, but I thought it was despicable that Robinhood ceased allowing people to buy the stock. And look, you know, I think that we all sort of know that the stock market and Wall Street is tilted towards the hedge funds and the money makers and the big guys. And this was a revolt of the little guys. I'm here for it.
Yeah. The thing with Robinhood, gross, that people act surprised, like the game is rigged. Like,
of course it is.
Wake up, dummies. Yeah. But overall,
don't people watch Succession or Billions?
Right.
That's all you have to do.
But on the one hand, like, look, hedge fund bros, push them into an active volcano. Because hedge funds, all you're doing is betting on the failure of American businesses. I hope y'all go broke. I have zero sympathy. On the other, I mean, let's be honest. A lot of these day traders, you're clearly also motivated by greed. It's not just to prove a point. I know that there's those people that are hold, prove the point. I get it.
Yeah.
But if you get caught holding the bag, like, I also have no sympathy. So either way, how about this? Stop making Twitter even more annoying than it already is by acting like you're Gordon Gekko. Like, that's been my,
yeah, I agree with that.
Jeez, like, enough. To the moon! Rocket emoji.
Yeah, I know.
Enough.
Well, there's a lot of Bobby Axelrods out there.
I hope you made a couple $100. Like, good for you.
That's pretty good.
Question number two.
To the moon.
Oh, so tired of it.
You don't like the rocket emoji?
Oh, it's so stupid. Like, great. You made like $80. Neat. Like, to the moon! What's scarier, a new voicemail or the doorbell?
A new voicemail.
Yeah, I hate a voicemail. Even if it's from someone I guess I'm waiting to hear from.
Yeah.
Like,
you just don't know.
Yeah, and you know you're going to call him back.
I used to have a boss, and I loved, you know, Joe Sullivan, my former boss at the Globe, but he would leave these cryptic voicemails, and you never knew, like, am I getting fired? He'd be like,
oh.
He would leave a voicemail that'd be like, Chris, Joe Sullivan at the Globe, call me back. And you're like, what? Am I fired? Like, what's going on?
Chris,
like,
I don't know if you get him from Rick Radzik, our program director here, who I love and has been great to me, but that's all he does. Can you give me a buzz back? Need to talk to you. I'm like, oh, this is the day, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You always feel like, oh, man, I'm done.
Yeah. Question number three. How often do you wash your bath towel?
I would say like once a week.
Okay. And I think some people might think that's gross. I've had this conversation recently. Like, you're supposed to do it maybe after every couple of showers.
Really? So I have two, and I alternate. So I alternate days, and then I'll wash them both like in a week. But
I hate doing laundry, and in a perfect world, like when I am king, I'm going to make clothes that just like disappear, and then you have new clothes. Like you wear them once or twice, and then poof, they're gone, and then they're replaced by like a newer version. So I never do laundry. I do it like every couple of weeks, which means my bath towel gets washed pretty much every couple of weeks, which I know is gross, and sometimes it smells real funky, but hey, it is what it is.
But here's my question. I don't understand that. You've come out of the shower. You're the cleanest you'll be all day.
Yeah, but then there's like a mildewy thing that can happen, okay. You know?
Well, I put my towels a lot of times too. Like, so now, you know, the poor man's heated towel rack is me throwing in the dryer for 20 minutes before I use it.
Well, on that, question number four. If you have house guests at the Casa de Gasper, do you make those house guests bring their own soap?
We haven't had house guests, but no, I don't think so, no.
No, so we don't either, but let me tell you why you should. Because of my friend Keith, who's a filthy animal, who he purposely, like, hit your soap, like the soap that you would use in your shower, that you would, like, you know, lather up with and wash your face with.
Okay, yeah.
He purposely uses your soap and what he describes as swiping it like a credit card. And you can imagine where.
Oh, no.
Like, he's so proud of himself. This is a near 50-year-old man that will get out, of the shower. I've been in hotels with him. And, like, afterwards, he's like, I hope you didn't use the soap. Swiped it like a credit card. This is a grown man with two children.
No,
so
that's awful.
Always make your house guests bring their own soap because there's people like my friend Keith.
So I would say I bring my own. So when I go down to the Cape, my wife's place, my in-law's place, I bring my own, like, bottle of like, body wash.
Yeah. Or the other thing, too, like the water socks, you know, wear those because you never know, like a lot of people peeing in the shower. I'm one of those people. All right. Final question. Groundhog Day is on Tuesday. Groundhog Day on Tuesday, Chris. If you could relive one day in your life again the exact same way that it was the first time, what day would that be?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like Groundhog Day has been from 2020 to 2021, no?
Sure has.
That's a great question. Jeez, I don't...
Just say the wedding day so you don't get in trouble.
Yeah, I was the first thing that came into my head was I was going to say the day I met my wife, because I would be just intrigued to see... I'd like to see that over again, you know? Just, you know, try and, like, how did it go? Is the way I remembered it accurate, you know? Was I feeling as good as I was at the time, you know, or was it really hanging by a thread and at any second I could have...
You'd screw it up.
Yeah.
By, like, talking like Nick Sirianni, the Eagles' new head coach. Nice to meet you. That guy's going to get eaten alive. All right, so concludes five questions for Chris Gasper. Nothing to do with sports. Always a pleasure, buddy.
Hey, this was good. A little bit of a rough start, but we found our groove.
Yeah, a little bit bumpy.
We caught a rhythm, as Kyrie would say.
Thanks to Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal. Read his Celtics works there, bostonsportsjournal.com, especially after tonight, after the Celtics hopefully win against LeBron and the Lakers. Coming up next, it's Matt McCarthy and Billy Lanny. Have we had this combination before? We have before. All right, I'll be tuning in. If you want to join them, 617-779-0985. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Talk to you Monday with Felger and Maz. Bye.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.